This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Heard Manny mention it right there, BT, that Frankie Montas is going to be shut down from throwing for a while. Huff, do you have more specifics on that? Before I go nuts here in about 30 seconds, I want all the details possible on what we have here. Puma reported what exactly? When they say significant period, what does that mean? Out for the season, out for a few months, missing opening day? What does that mean, significant?
I mean, the report that he put out was just he hasn't been throwing at all and will apparently remain shut down for a significant stretch. So you put two and two together.
Here's what I put together. And remember, BT, I said you can't get on Stearns, but I was talking about for the way that they were operating as opposed to some of the moves. In real time, when the Mets signed Frankie Montas, you and I both, I think, said that...
Didn't like it.
And there's a reason for that. We saw Montas here. He was horrible with the Yankees. He wasn't healthy. And David Stearns thinks he's smarter than everybody else. And they took a chance on Montas. And you know what I had to say? You know what? Maybe you're right. Because I doubted their staff last year. Doubted the staff last year. Didn't love it. I liked Manaea. Didn't love Severino signing. Didn't like the way the whole thing was built, especially with Senga out. I wanted more. This year, it's like, hey, you know what? You shut me up once. I'm going to sit back and watch you go to work. Do your thing. And they choose Montas. And that was the one I said, man, even with trusting David Stearns, Montas? Like, this is the guy you're going to go in on? To a point where I started thinking, hey, maybe Montas could be pretty good. Well, I should have trusted my initial instinct. I was right. Stearns was wrong. Frankie Montas is useless. You could have spent that money elsewhere, like Walker Buehler. Already, before you get started, you're losing one of your prized possessions in the offseason as far as that rotation goes. Now, they'll be fine. You know, Tyler McGill will take his spot. They have depth in the rotation, which is okay. Not the end of the world. But boy genius, who had a great first year, year two all of a sudden... Already with the Frankie Montas, that one he was begging. Stearns was begging. You were begging to get ripped with that, Frankie Montas. And here we are.
What the hell's wrong with him? It's just, it's so unclear. It's like, wow.
Yeah, that's okay. A weird one, isn't it?
Strange.
Shut down from throwing for...
No, but he hasn't even been throwing, right? He has been throwing prior to this. So he shows up in camp after not throwing at all. Then the moment he shows up in camp, they're already telling us now, February, what, 17th, whatever it is. He ain't pitching for a while. All right, so now what's the pivot here? I think, and I know that you just laid out some of the younger names, whether it's McGill, Peterson, who I do like. Obviously, Senga's coming back here. You got to go get Dylan Cease. I mean, you got to reengage the Padres for Dylan Cease. You have to.
I don't know if I would go nuts with that. Maybe they are a little more. I think, again, remember, to your point, same thing as we discussed with other teams or the Yankees, whatever. Like, they don't need to go make a move right now on February 18th, whatever the day, 17th, and go get a pitcher to replace Frankie Montas in the rotation. However, if they know he's going to be out a significant amount of time, I do think that changes a little bit. All right, well, we thought we were going to have this guy, and our depth has already taken a hit. Before we even get started, maybe we have to recalibrate slightly. I don't know if I would go overly aggressive for one of those guys. Maybe they do pivot that soon. Maybe you see what shakes out in season after you try to survive for the first month or so. But, I mean, it's a problem because Montas was supposed to be, what, their number four this year? Number three, maybe?
No, I mean, so, let's see. Manaea.
Senga.
Peterson. One and two. Yeah, was Frankie going to really
was
be three?
Holmes would have been behind him.
Holmes probably four or five. Yeah, I guess Frankie may have been three or four.
Hey, it's either where you put Peterson. You want to put Peterson three and Montas four or Montas
three? I would,
three?
Of course. I would think Peterson's Peterson better
three,
at this point.
Peterson three and Montas four. I mean, but they didn't, I mean, you know, they paid Montas a pretty good.
And they gave him a player option, too.
Next year. Yeah, I mean, look, I hated it at the time.
Yeah.
I had no choice but to trust Stearns. But you knew the second that there was going to be an issue with Montas, and I didn't think he was going to get injured before the season started. I just thought he wasn't going to be very good.
Yeah.
But this is like this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. This is what Montas does.
No, but I'm still surprised just given the nature of where we are, and he's so far away from even doing anything remotely connected to throwing a baseball. What happened to him?
Yeah.
I mean, did they sign him? Was he damaged goods?
Yeah, that is a good point. Was there any detail on, like, was he throwing? He must have been already throwing, no?
I thought Hoff said that he wasn't throwing for a couple weeks.
They said that he hasn't thrown. Yeah. He has not been throwing.
That's what I thought he said.
And will apparently remain shut down. So
now, to be fair, go ahead, Hoff.
Is it throwing since he's arrived at camp? I don't know.
That's what I was going to say. Now, yeah, he showed up at Port St. Lucie a couple days ago. Okay, he hasn't thrown at Port St. Lucie, or he wasn't throwing, working his way up on his own in January. I don't know.
Because, hold on, let me just rewind a little bit, because New York Mets on February 12th, here's a lie right here. Frankie Montas drawing a crowd and him throwing a baseball. So
when was that, February 12th,
really?
five days ago?
Yeah.
Well, maybe just long toss, not a bullpen session.
Right, so he's on the mound with a bunch of guys.
Yeah, the exact tweet from Puma, Frankie Montas has not been throwing and will apparently remain shut down for a significant stretch. Maybe he hasn't been throwing for, it could be 3 days,
That's why I ask.
2 hours.
Yeah, right. Wow. Yeah, he hasn't been throwing today.
Oh. Has he been inactive all winter is what I'm looking for. Because if that's the case, then you sign somebody who was hurt.
He said more info coming soon. Well, remember, Cashman traded for a guy in Montas who was hurt.
I know.
That's what I'm saying about this
Pitched
guy.
Pitched one game for the Yankees a couple years ago. One.
It wasn't
one
even about
game.
Performance. It was, and now he gets a contract, and who knows? Oh, God, I hate it. He would have been the one name that Stearns could have brought in that would have made me irate or at least question him at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I did go nuts. And then I was like, hey, you know what? You have to trust him. Maybe, you know what? Maybe the numbers show this or the Mets think they could do that with him.
Yeah.
But I just didn't like the competitor that Montas was.
Me neither.
Forget about the stuff. I didn't like the competitor that he was.
You want Strobeck? Take him off our hands?
In theory, yes. If not for his clubhouse presence.
I think his clubhouse likes him.
Yeah.
I know it was different with the Mets. I get it. I get that.
I would not bring Marcus Stroman in, but I wish that there was a different energy around Stroman and the Mets because I love the pitcher. I still do.
He's got stones. He gets after it.
He goes out there every fifth day. He's competitive. He's not great, but he's going to give, you know what you're getting? You're getting 5-6 competitive innings from him.
He'll give you a chance to win.
Put the ball in play. You get a good defense behind you. Yeah. So I like Stroman, the competitor.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't, based on stuff that I've heard and that has been out there for a while. I mean, remember, I was a big fan of Marcus Stroman. I had a little rapport with him on social media, and then he blocked me for some unknown reason. Like, he went nuts with me. Why? Well, because they criticized the Mets? I mean, good God. You're going to be that sensitive? Like, relax. But I think there were other issues that were going on there that I heard about. There's some stuff behind the scenes that were...
A little messy.
By the way, multiple areas. Which is why I was shocked that the Yankees signed him. Because if I knew about that, they had to know about it. But to Stroman's credit, he was terrific with the Yankees as far as that goes last year.
Well, and you know, it's funny because over the weekend, you know, there's a lot of stuff about Stroman. And after we finished up our show on Friday, and I know that this is more about Montas, but it's just another point on Stroman that I didn't make because I didn't really know this, or I just didn't think that I needed to make this. But just to clarify, so my only issue, and I thought you and I had a really, really good start to the show. It was great. So if you guys want to check it out, free Odyssey app, WFAN YouTube from Friday's show. My only pushback with Montas, not that he said repeatedly, I'm a starter. I respect
Stroman,
that.
Stroman, yes.
Pardon me, thank you, Stroman. That I'm a starter, not that he was a little belligerent in that, but that he did flat out say, I'm not going to pitch out of the bullpen. If he would have not said that, then everything would have been perfect because it speaks to his competitive nature. It speaks to his, like, that edge that helped him become a major leaguer despite being diminutive in size based on his peers. Like, that's why he's a dog. My only point of contention was, all right, that's where you cross the line by saying you're not going to do something that they might tell you to do. Not the fact that he kept saying I'm a starter. I had no problem with that.
Right. But more that if they did ask, that he was
going to
do
the bullpen.
Yeah, and look, now either way, the Mets have an issue here. And I mean,
so do the Yankees with Stanton. Yeah, not a good start here.
If it weren't for the issue, if it weren't for the Mets knowing Stroman or us knowing what went on there, then I think that, it'd be a good fit. Or maybe not the Met-Yankee thing, but Stroman's the exact type of pitcher who you would want to give you some depth and lengthen out that rotation. Now, we need to see what's going to happen here. We kind of know where we're at with Stanton, right, where it says he's going to be shut down for
a while. He's out. He's not even playing opening day. He's out months.
So the Yankees need to figure that out. With Montas, Puma said there'll be more to come shortly, so I'm sure we'll find out more details on this.
Yep.
But it's never good before the season gets started, before really spring training gets underway, where you're losing one of your top five starters.
No, it's not.
And you were thin to begin with. Now, this is going to be on the Mets to go figure out how to replace him, whether it's just Tyler McGill. I almost called him Mike Pelfrey because he's similar to me. Tyler McGill, you bring him in, sure, but now you're still, either way, you're already going to that depth in that rotation. Remember, the Mets are going to be using a six-man rotation here.
To protect Senga. So you have to have somebody who's viable. We didn't like the signing, but at least Montas, he had some strikeouts last year. When he's healthy, he is viable. Let me just kick the tires again on Stroman back to the Mets here.
Yeah.
Why don't you, number one, it's a different manager. It's a different energy, and it's a different culture. So why wouldn't you, at the very least, call up Juan or talk to Juan, in the manager's office? Hey, what was he like with the Yankees? What was he like there?
How much money would you be given to send him?
I don't know what they were willing to do with the others. I mean, from a Yankee, but you got to give him at least half. You got to bite the bullet on half.
Yeah, probably more than that. Well, my point was going to be, I could just go spend that $8 million on somebody else. Like, there's actually a lot of good arms out there. Hoff, can you get a list of us for the current free agent pitchers? If not, I could bring it up here in a second, but I'm trying to go through the rotation. Let's just go over the rotation real quick, too. Am I missing somebody? Senga, or Minaya 1, Senga 2, Peterson, Holmes, McGill, and Montas were supposed to be the six, or was...
There was always a thought maybe that either Griffin Canning or McGill.
Oh, right, or Blackburn, right, okay. Yeah. So take McGill. So McGill's going to be the guy, right? Blackburn or Griffin Canning. So the Mets had like eight deep, I guess, right? If you go Canning, Jesus. I mean, they're eight deep, but Senga, Minaya, no particular order. Senga, Minaya, Peterson, Holmes, McGill, Blackburn, Canning, and then it's supposed to be Montas. So that's eight right there.
Yeah, that's eight.
It's a good lineup.
Yeah, it's eight, but now you take out Montas, who was one of the better ones.
Mm-hmm.
Take him out. That's down to seven. And of those seven, you have a guy who's converting from a bullpen to be a starter. You have Tyler McGill, who's not any good. Blackburn's like a serviceable. Yeah, basically, of those seven, you have three fives or four fives.
That's where I was going. I mean, the fragility of Senga, you hope that resolves itself, but you still got to be prepared to navigate it if it doesn't. And then... Now, I like the Clay Holmes signing. I thought that was out of the box. I remember that when I'm like, I think, and he had some starts with the Pirates back in the day, so he's going to have to build up his strength. I think he'll be good with a pretty good defensive infield as well. We talked about that with Torres and third base for the Yankees a year ago, a little messy. So his numbers should be better. But I think that I said before this that I thought the Mets needed another arm.
Right.
I really did. Now, what, Evan Dove just said Quintana? You want Quintana back?
I thought he signed somewhere, didn't he?
I don't know if he signed. I guess Evan just tweeted that.
Did I make that up?
Oh, bring him back.
I like Quintana.
He's a culture guy. He's going to get a chance to win if he's your fifth or sixth guy. Why did I get him back in camp?
What was that, a dream that I had or something? I'm trying to look up. Hoff, let me know when you get a list. But, I would take Quintana back. I mean, but again, it's going to be somebody like that. I would have loved Walker Buehler. It's not going to happen. Yeah, you have a
list?
You're ready. All right. The top names, Patrick Corbin.
Oh, no. God, he was awful.
No, next.
Jose Quintana.
Yes, like him.
Yeah, I take him.
Kyle Gibson.
No.
Andrew Heaney.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't love him, but I'd take a flyer on him. These are similar guys.
Anthony DeSclafani. Lance Lynn.
Lance Lynn's a guy that...
What did he do last year? You don't have that up right now. I'm
Lance
too much.
Lynn...
He didn't have a good season, I don't think.
Yeah, but...
I think it's over for Lance Lynn.
Yeah, I mean, it could be.
Let's see, who else we got? James Paxton. No. Alex Wood, Jose Urquidy, but I believe he has Tommy John.
Yeah, right.
So he's basically going to pitch. John Means is, I believe, getting picked up right now by...
Was it Texas? Who was it?
Somebody from the Central, I believe. No, maybe not Central. But somebody on the American League team is picking up John Means. Mike Clevenger, Spencer Turnbull? Is he available?
Why do I feel like there were better options? Maybe Pavetta because he came off the board.
Yeah, four-year deal.
Here we go. Rich Hill.
No, come on, Rich Hill.
he's almost 45. Let's go.
Quintana, it's a layup.
What's Jamie Moyer group. Doing?
Yeah.
Quintana, out of all those guys, I like Quintana anyway. I would have wanted the Mets to bring him back.
Yeah.
Now, again, either way, it's a little bit of a drop-off from what they expected Montas to be. Or, to your point, BT, go trade for somebody. Could be Stroman.
Did King sign in the last couple? He didn't sign, right, King, but the Padres? I know that Dylan C is still available. King didn't sign anything,
I don't
did
think
he?
So. No one
expected
so.
He had, what he did is he signed a 2-year deal. So he had like the option for next year. The way that the structure is it doesn't count this year as much.
Okay.
So they kind of gave a weird type of contract. It's like $4 million for this year.
Could they still trade him if they want it, or are they not allowed to based on the CBA?
I think they could trade him, but I think he'd cost too much because of how much he's going to get next year.
Gotcha. So listen, C's, but here's the thing, though. Too. Like, neither one of us liked when the Mets signed Montas. So I guess the way I look at it now is like, all right, we didn't like it when they got him because we didn't think he was very good. So why are we going to go nuts that he got hurt?
Well, because
I know the strength of numbers. Yeah. I get that. The depth, for sure.
Because they needed that anyway.
Yeah.
Now, maybe they're saying, well, and it depends on the severity of it. They're making it sound like, or at least it seems like, it's significant. Now, for a significant amount of time with more to come,
yeah.
I'm thinking... You know, maybe not worst case scenario, but it doesn't seem like
it doesn't sound good.
Okay, so then my question is: are you saying, well, why do you need to go nuts right now? Because they just mentioned the other seven names.
Yeah, but two of those guys could be better than Montas.
Yeah, no, I get that, but now what if something goes wrong? And you're talking about a 6-man rotation to begin with. My God,
are they married to that 6-man? No matter what, just because of Senga, 100%.
I think because of Senga, yeah.
All right. I still don't think that's the worst thing in the world. The 6-man rotation is, I don't love it, but I get it. And I think it's okay maybe for them. But
you got to hope Holmes. Holmes I trust.
Transitions.
In level of trust, Manaea, Senga, Peterson, Holmes.
Yep. I would agree with that.
I go even Blackburn. I don't trust Tyler McGill. He stinks. He's too up and down.
Not a McGill
Tyler
guy.
McGill, I mean, at some point you'd think the guy would figure it out.
I always lump Peterson and McGill together, and now, like, the last year, I'm like, nah, Peterson's just better than McGill.
He separated himself, no question about it. But it's still fragile to be, even if you're saying, well, yeah, I trust these guys. I mean, if you get the best of Manaea, the best of Senga, the best of Peterson, all right, that's nice. And even the best of Holmes, yeah, you'd be okay. I could deal with Blackburn, McGill, and Canning as a fifth starter. But two of those guys, you're going 5-6?
Do you try to add another stick and just try to bludgeon people to death? I mean, do you change philosophy here? I'm not saying like a big dog stick, but, you know, somebody.
Think about it, BT. To your point, they needed an arm anyway.
Yep.
It was going to be fine going in, but they needed an arm anyway. Now they really need an arm. So it's just a matter of how aggressive they want to be and when they want to, make that. But, I mean, you see this rotation holding up. You don't win a division with this rotation?
I don't. But I also said before Frankie went down, I thought they needed the other arm.
Yeah, I know. At least he had the potential. Like, Montas wasn't bad a year ago. And you're factoring in the Mets effect, right? Like, they make the most. Like, Severino was awful when he was with the Yankees before the Mets last year.
Yep.
They made the most of him. Not saying that would have happened again, but that was the formula have some success, and obviously it didn't work out that way. Already off to a great start. BT and Sal on the Fan. We'll get back to your calls. 888-808-1019. Although, I guess of all the names you could have lost,
that's the one you don't mind.
Well, I mean, he'd probably be... Well, how would you rank the level of trust if you had Montas in there? You still go... I'd go Manaea, Senga, Peterson. We agree with those three?
Manaea, Senga, Peterson. I would go Holmes in front of him. I would have him fifth.
Okay.
But I really would.
Yeah.
I might even have him sixth.
I'd probably have him,
if you do it a 6-man over who's
Blackburn, Canning, McGill.
Probably, I'd have him fifth.
Yeah. I'd probably have him fourth over Holmes just because he's done it before.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. for millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Something very interesting and unorthodox has occurred over the last 2 days, Sean. I don't know if you've seen it. I don't know if you feel it. I don't know if you feel it's as unusual as maybe I feel it is. The owner of the New York Mets is talking to his fans. And he's not just saying, hey, guys, I love you. I gave you Juan Soto. He's threatening Met fans. And that may sound kind of stark and like crazy. What do you mean he's threatening Met fans? I want you to take a listen to something Steve said yesterday. He did an interview with the great Howie Rose on the Meet Me at the Apple podcast. And Steve Cohen decided to challenge us as Met fans. Take a listen.
I'm sort of looking at 2025 as an important year for the fans. I mean, I, you know, committed and highly committed to putting the best product on the field. I was a little disappointed in the attendance last year, given the quality of the team. And I'm hoping and that the fans come out this year because I just think it's a blast there. And I think that's a I think they'll have a phenomenal time with a team that I'm excited by.
So what Daddy said right there was, I just spent a crap load of money, okay? I spent a crap load of money last year too, and where are you? Why weren't you at my ballpark? And I took that as when he says it's a challenge to Met fans. And by the way, there's more of Steve Cohen talking about this, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes. I took that as him telling Met fans, hey, guys, I did my part. Now it's time to do you to do your part.
That gives me so much anxiety for the Met fan out there. Because the next question is, how much is it for the average fan to be doing their part? How many of us can't afford season tickets?
I get it.
How many games do I have to go to that every other Met fan is going to be like me and we all do our part? Because we've all spent our time spending Steve Cohen's money. So he wanted to spend it that way too. Look, as an owner, he has every right to turn around and expect you as a customer to spend. But it's asking a lot for people to go to more than three games a year.
I totally get the difficulties of it. Like, I'm not sitting here and saying, boy, you better go to a game if you want the Mets to spend. But I think Steve Cohen is having an honest conversation with all of us. And in that honest conversation, he's reminding us of something. He spent his money on this team. Okay, this isn't like the Yankees. This isn't like the Dodgers where they make such a fortune and he's spending a lot of the revenue they make. Steve Cohen went into his own pocket, spent money, and he's reminding Met fans, hey, guys, you better show up.
But here's where I have an issue with it, though. Can we wait till, I don't know, mid-May when we have a month's full of attendance, some of which may not be great in bad weather, before Steve Cohen maybe says he's a little disappointed in attendance? Can you give the fans off of all the goodwill that was last year and the goodwill that was this offseason, finished off by re-signing Pete Alonso? Can you give your fan base a chance to prove themselves before we basically veiled threaten them that I'm not going to spend money? Because look, Evan, let's be real.
He didn't say it. I'm surmising it.
But we all can surmise.
You're surmising that too.
And we're going to play more Steve Cohen cuts. Look, here's the truth. I'm a Yankee fan. You're a Met fan that spends money on season tickets.
Yes.
I, as a Yankee fan, never have to worry about this because no matter how many games I attend and no matter how many beers I buy or tickets I purchase, I know that whether it's through tourism or Yankee baseball, the sellouts are always going to happen. I would hate to be in a position as a Met fan where we have enough stresses in life. Your family life, your work life, your sports are our release from stresses.
And the stresses that come with wins and losses and pennant races and all that are another story. I don't want to feel stress and anxiety as a fan. Oof, I didn't get to a game in the last 2 weeks. Is this, am I not doing my part? I think that part sucks that Steve Cohen is making fans feel like
he's
that.
He's being honest, huh? I mean, that's what he's doing. He's being honest.
But can you wait, Evan?
Here's more from Steve Cohen talking to Howie Rose about, hey, is there, you know, what's going on? What's going on with the attendance at Citi Field from last year and how disappointed Steve was?
We're definitely seeing an uplift, and I'm excited by that. And I just want it to be sustained because I remember being in the ballpark. I think we were playing the Nationals right before the final series against Philadelphia. And we're right in the middle of a pennant race. I think there were 18,000 people in attendance at Citi Field. And I was like, we're right in the middle of a pennant race. Where is everybody? And so I'm hoping, expecting that the fans will come out and really enjoy a great product this year.
I do remember that too. And, you know, we talk about this on the air, and this is the difference in the conversation we're going to have today and the conversation we've had in the past. In the past, when we've talked about, hey, why haven't the Mets drawn well?
Right.
It's just a generic, it's expensive, it's tough to get there. And we didn't feel like there are any consequences to it. Today, this conversation is different because the owner is telling you, and you heard it in that clip too, he's pissed off.
Yeah.
He looked around for those few games before the Philly series, because when they played the Phillies that weekend, the place was packed. Yep. And then obviously the postseason, the place was electric, no question. But for those games against the Nationals, which were very important games, he's right. I remember being there too, thinking the same damn thing. Like, what is going on? And I always hear the same excuses. Well, it's September. Oh, there's a Jewish holiday. Oh, the kids are back in school. All of those things are true, but they also apply to the New York Yankees. And they didn't seem to have an issue drawing. And even the Mets of the past, like the Mets have had very good attendance seasons. It's not like they never have. And for whatever reason, last year sucked. And he did say that they're selling a few more tickets, so this year should be better. But he's telling you, hey, you better not do this to me again. Well, and I understand your worries and anybody's worries listening right now saying, hey, I can't go to a game. It's too. I get it. But he's still telling you, you better show up or I'm not going to spend. That's how I took his comments.
And I took him the same way. But look, just the point stands. As fans, we're allowed to tell an owner how to spend this money because he could choose to listen to us or choose not. You shouldn't be telling the average New Yorker, hey, if you're a Met fan, you're not doing your part that I did mine if you're not coming to games, which is what he's saying. And I just have a big issue with that. There's a million ways to support a team. How many people went and couldn't wait to pre-order those Juan Soto jerseys?
Yeah, and then wait 2 months for them to arrive.
Exactly. How many people showed up to that Met Fan Fest or buying the hats everywhere? There are other ways to spend your money as a fan other than committing to going to multiple games, which is harder and harder for people to do. And I know Steve Cohen knows that he's a Met fan, but I hope when you spend $800 million on Juan Soto, the idea isn't I'm shutting down the wallet after this if we don't do. And what's the number, too? You know, he said 18,000. Is 25,000 enough in these September games when kids go back to school?
It's a very fair question. And so those clips we just played for you was from yesterday. It was recorded on Friday, but it was yesterday, a podcast he did with the great Howie Rose. Earlier today, and you heard it right here on this radio station, aired at, when it happened, I think about 10:30 this morning with BT and Sal, Steve Cohen met the media again. And he talked about a variety of subjects, and he was asked, Hey, Steve, how did it feel to be 18th in attendance? And here's what Steve said today about the subject.
Yeah, I didn't like it. Okay, that really bothered me. 18th in attendance when we're right in the middle of a pennant race. I've said this before. The series against the Nationals, right before the final Philly series, I think there were 18,000 fans in the stadium during a great pennant race. And so I'm really hopeful this year. I mean, I'm told that usually attendance lags performance. And so I'm really looking forward to this year being a year when the fans come out.
You can hear he's pissed.
Yeah.
You can hear he's upset about it. And here's where I'm going to defend Steve Cohen, because I know a lot of people are going to call in, rightfully so, absolutely, and say, guys, it's expensive to go to a game. Guys, it costs too much money. Guys, parking's a pain in the ass. Guys, the SNY crew is so good, I'd rather stay home. Like, I know it and I respect it, okay? But now let me give you Steve Cohen's perspective. This is far different from the New York Yankees and far different from the LA Dodgers. The New York Yankees make a ton of money, okay? They bring in a crap load of money from the fact that they own part of the YES Network to just being the Yankee brand that they are. The New York Mets don't make as much money. They don't. So when Steve Cohen spends on the team, here's what's far different than Hal Steinbrenner. He's literally going into his pocket. He's taking out his wallet. I'm holding mine right now. And he's taking money out and saying, okay, Pete Alonso. Okay, Juan Soto. He is spending his own money. And I appreciate that. We all do. He's treating the New York Mets like a public trust. Thank you very much. Well, there comes a point where when you spend your own money and it's right. not being returned, and I get why. I'm not criticizing fans for this. Trust me. I go to less games than I ever did. I still go to a lot of games, but trust me. I'm right. not the guy I was 10 years ago. No. I know that. But look at his perspective. If I'm spending my own money, you want me to continue doing this when you're not showing up? Like, I know this is an uncomfortable conversation, but I get where he's coming from. And the tone of his voice and what he said to Howie and what he said today, let's have a reality conversation. If the Mets don't draw well this year, the idea that Papa Cohen is going to drop $300 million every offseason for any toy you want is a fallacy. It's going to stop. So for anybody, including Tommy, and I don't mean to call you out, but you're sitting right here, for Tommy to sit here and say, go get me Vladimir Guerrero Jr. when you're not doing your part by going to a game, Steve Cohen's going to look at you and say, really? You're the guy demanding I spend more of my money? What have you given me?
I've given him a voice on the radio station.
Stop.
That's a hell of a lot more, and that gets people. Wait a second.
Put on your hard hat and relate to other fans.
I agree with
that.
That
don't have that voice.
But by pushing the positivity, it might get a person to go to the game.
Oh, my God.
Come on.
Steve Cohen needs me to go to 10 games a year. That would really fill it up.
Because here's the thing, Tommy. You have spouted off, and this isn't meant to be an attack, a lot about what it's like to be the big brother in town again. And what Steve Cohen, your owner, is telling you, whether you like it or not, is that the fans are basically lockstep with the team and having to prove that. You have to draw as a fan base for Steve Cohen to continue to spend like that. And you're right, Evan's pointed out, he's not going to dip into his own pocket. But at the same time, when you're Steve Cohen, you also have to acknowledge you do have less fans in town. You want to send this message, that's fine. But I just don't like personally calling out fans and basically saying, you're 18th of the 10th, you better be better than that.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the Toronto Blue Jays could not agree on a contract extension. They were going to negotiate until the start of spring training. They did. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. confirmed that earlier today, was asked if they were ever close on an extension, and his one-word answer said it all. No. So he was pretty blunt about it. But now that there won't be a contract extension, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s name is going to be mentioned a lot. For two reasons. Number one, if the Blue Jays fall out of it, they may well trade him before the trade deadline. And then number two, he's going to be one of those elite-level free agents that hit the market a year from now. Now, let's start with the Mets. Steve Cohen earlier today was asked about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and his availability next year, and he answered it this way.
Yeah, he's a great ball player, once again, I'll worry about that next year. Obviously with payroll considerations you really can't have, you can't have too many long-term contracts because then you lose your roster flexibility. So you got to be really careful. But I'll let my baseball people make that decision.
So code for, guys, you pigs. I'm not giving you Vlad to. I mean, forget the attendance thing like we talked about earlier. That goes without saying. But come on, guys. I've already got you Lindor long-term. I got you Soto long-term. It's not happening. And so I took that answer as a sign that it is very unlikely that Tommy is going to get what he wants, that Sal is going to get what he wants. And by the way, I'm not anti-Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I'll make my opinion on him clear in a few minutes, but let's just get this out of the way. I think Steve Cohen basically told us, yeah, that's not happening.
If we're taking him at face value, then that's ridiculous. You can't in one breath say, I want more people to show up to the ballpark, and then in the next breath say, well, we're not going to sign this great player. By signing great players, you are drawing more fans to the stands.
You are spoiled.
Yeah, he's a spoiled Met fan.
Did you hear that?
We have our first sign of a spoiled Mets fan.
Yeah.
Steve Cohen, and I quote in the cut we played earlier, it's a fun time to be at Citi Field. With all due respect, Steve Cohen, you're watching grass grow and guys chew, sunflower seeds. It's a baseball game. So what makes it exciting is by having... He's acting like you're going to, like, you know, Vegas to have a good time.
It is. It's fun. There's stuff going on in between innings.
That's annoying.
So much for being positive about the Mets.
Well,
I mean, basically, you said it's the most boring experience.
No, what I'm trying to say is in the one breath, you can't say, I want people at the ballpark, and then in the next breath say, well, I'm not going to sign Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You get more people to the games by having superstar star power
Star players. They have an MVP caliber player in Lindor, almost won it last year, and they've got one of the great hitters of our generation in Juan Soto.
Yeah.
Like,
and more.
You're kind of being spoiled, Brad.
You're damn right. That's what it's, when you're big brother, you're spoiled.
You're right.
Want.
It's the evil empire.
But wouldn't you want Pete to just be the all-time Mets home run hitter and not be pushed out by Vlad Guerrero Jr.?
He won't be pushed out. He could be the DH next year, and Vladdy could be the first base.
So, look, I don't know how realistic that is, considering Pete Alonso's making $30 million this year, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., when he said he was far apart with the Blue Jays, he was probably asking for $400 million. He's asking for $35, $40 million a year. I want to answer it this way about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., because I think it's very, very complicated. I don't think it's as simple as who's better, Pete Alonso or Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I think that answer, based on age, based on defense, based on, you know, really the way they've projected over the last couple of years, the answer is obviously Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I'm not arguing that. But here's what I would argue. Value matters. Flexibility matters.
Yeah.
How much you're paying a certain player versus not paying a certain player and having the room to buy other players matters. If you're asking me, and by the way, if you look at the last 4 years of Pete Alonso and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., not just last year, but the last 4 years, you would see that Alonso's had 2 years that were better and Vlad has had 2 years that were better. Those are the facts. In 2023, Pete Alonso had a better year than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I don't know how anyone could argue that. You want to look at war, you want to look at home runs, you want to look at OPS, whatever metric you want to look at, Pete was better in 2023. Last year, Vlad was far better. No argument there. In 2022, it was close, but Pete Alonso was better then too. So they've been comparable over the last 4 years, but with that saying, I still would prefer Vlad. He's younger, higher upside. But if you've got to pay one guy a 10-year, $400 million contract, and you pay the other guy, let's say, 3 years, 90, because I'm not convinced Pete, even off a good year, is going to be able to get this mega contract, now you got to incorporate value. And when it comes to that, yes, I'd prefer Pete Alonso over Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and that doesn't have anything to do with home run records or homegrown. It has to do with value. Steve Cohen just told you. How many guys can we give 10-year contracts to?
And remember this, and this is the one thing that would dissuade me right away from Vlad Guerrero Jr. It's great to live in the moment. The more and more you go with these rosters and the long-term deals, is Juan Soto eventually picking up a first base glove or turning into a DH? Because I got news for you. Vlad Guerrero Jr. already busted his ass once in his career to lose a ton of weight to make sure he stayed in that field. Once he gets that money, I have major, major worries about whether he is not going to be a DH sooner rather than later.
You're right. That's why
that would bother me from both the Soto perspective and, you know, if we talked about the Yankees.
That's why when people frame it as Guerrero versus Pete Alonso, that's not fair. You got to frame it as Guerrero on a 10-year deal versus Pete on a 3-year deal.
Right.
Because I think I'm just being realistic on what they may get in the open market. And maybe I'm off by a little bit, but I don't think Pete's ever getting this mega long-term contract. I think he's going to have to settle for 3-4-year deals, maybe with opt-outs mixed in. We'll see about Vlad, but I think Vlad, because of his age, may demand a 10-year contract and get it in the open market. So if we are being fair about this, it's Vlad on that contract versus Pete on a shorter contract. Now I framed it in a correct way. Who would you prefer, Tommy? And you can't say both.
Why can't I say both?
Because I don't think that's realistic. Daddy just told you, you better show up to Citi Field, and your answer was, I speak into a microphone.
But I work too much.
What I would say, if Steve Cohen was my daddy, I'd be like, but Daddy, you've worked this hard, so we can do both. We could go to Disney and Paris. It doesn't have to be
or. If it is an and or, and I'm giving you what I think is realistic contracts they're going to get in free agency, which would you prefer?
Now you're asking me to pick between my head and my heart, because you know how I feel about Pete Alonso emotionally.
Forget the heart! So, use your head! So, the head still says Alonso!
And the right head.
Easy, Tiger. Yes, it would be Pete. But I still would
not
like
because
it to be,
he's better.
No,
so because, no, let's not cut this and make it something it's not. It is value.
I understand the value, but I thought we got rid of the value meal when the Wilpon sold the
team. Oh, come on. They've got a three.
Boy.
But Evan.
I love you, bro. You're a pig.
I, you're damn right, and I waited 40 friggin' years to be a pig, and now I'm a pig for a year or two, and you're telling me I'm full? I got a full belly here. I could eat.
Say it, honey.
Marash is eight for years. You know this, Sean. I always mock you guys at the your Christmas
literally
list,
or figuratively.
At the end of the year, a Yankee fan, you know, sign Barry Bonds, dig up the Babe, add this. And you know why? There's fans in seats because of it. Because you do spend and you do add those players.
But we've never spent $800 million. You spent enough for three players and one player. That changes things. The Yankees still haven't done that.
And I think we'd all agree that Juan Soto is preferred over Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Sure.
Yes. I think they made the right choice in that regard. So
from that regard,
we're going to find out in a year, but
at
I'm telling
Soto
you
Soto already lost the weight that he had gained.
He put it off immediately.
Fat.
We'll kind of find out in a year. I'm telling you right now, the Mets are not getting Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And I think that Steve Cohen made it clear. But you know what? We like to make long-term predictions on this radio show.
Oh, without Teague?
Without Tiki. Tiki missed it. He's meeting with the president today. 3:12 p.m. on February 18th in 2026. What team is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. playing for? Sean Morash.
The San Francisco Giants.
Wow. Someone's actually going to agree to play baseball in San Francisco, California. I know Willie Adames has, but
I know.
Another guy has. Tommy Lugauer, I know your answer, but let's just make it official.
The Mets.
Evan Roberts, that's me. Hey, Jet, can you turn the microphone on for a second? Oh, yeah, he doesn't know how to do that. There you go. Very good. Look at you. Press it harder. Bang. No, harder. Can you turn his mic on
for me? Do you work in engineering or not?
No, it's not working. Like, I
think that mic doesn't work.
Oh, come over here. Come here with that.
All right. Perfect time.
Jet, I want you to name any baseball team in the sport. We're trying to predict where this really good player, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., is going to go. So, in your opinion, what baseball team will he play for in 2026? You can name any team you want.
Red Sox.
Good job. Thank you, Jet.
Time for another Evan and Tiki long-term bet.
Yeah, I agree with him. It's the Red Sox.
I didn't even tell him. The car ride in?
No, I swear.
He just blurts out Red Sox, knows they might have an opening. Oh,
that's the team. That would be my prediction. I'm so happy.
Like son right there.
Yeah.
How about that? Good job, Jet.
I think it's going to be the Red Sox, but let's get to the Yankees and the Red Sox for a quick second. Sure. We'll get back to your calls here. Here's the predicament. If the Blue Jays fall out of it, which I'm not sure they are. I like their pitching staff. I think they have a chance to be good. If they're in it, they're not trading Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Correct. They're going to go for it one more time with him.
Okay. If they fall out of it and they sell him off, would the Blue Jays have the stomach to trade him inside the American League East to the Boston Red Sox or the New York Yankees? And the way it would make sense for the Yankees is if Stanton is seriously hurt or if Paul Goldschmidt's a complete utter failure.
Right.
Obviously, right now, they would not have an obvious opening unless they move Vlad back to third base for a year, which I do not think is a terrible idea. Imagine that lineup if you could stick Vlad in it.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
He's played third base before.
Yes.
I would lean towards know that the Blue Jays wouldn't have the stomach to do it, but in free agency next year, I think the Yankees make a ton of sense. Goldschmidt's going to be gone in all likelihood. Cody Bellinger has a chance to be gone, so you're talking about clearing close to $40 million. You're a year closer to the end of DJ LeMahieu and Giancarlo Stanton, and so here's another building block for you offensively for the next decade.
Well, there's two things at hand here. Number one, as far as would the Blue Jays trade in division, I think they're trading to whoever the highest bidder is, because if we've learned anything about this offseason, it's that no free agent wants to sign in Toronto long-term. So if I'm them, I got to get a hold of whatever prospects I'm getting. That's number one. Number two, financially, Vlad Guerrero Jr. and the Yankees will and can be a match. But like I just told you a little while ago, I just see a guy that is going to be a DH sooner rather than later. And the beauty when Giancarlo is done here is the idea of flexibility. And where is Aaron Judge's long-term projection on this team? Is he going to be a DH? Is he going to be a first baseman? I am just in favor of making the team more flexible, forget financially, but in the field and at those positions where Vlad Guerrero Jr. worries me. I understand all the Dodger stuff. Murakami, to me, little, you know, whatever, younger, doesn't seem as fat at times. I think him.
Doesn't seem as fat?
Also,
why are you fat-shaming Vlad Guerrero Jr.? You've said that like seven
that
times
whole,
during this discussion.
That whole getting his rump in shape thing. He feels, I know an eater when I see one, and I'm an eater. Also, look, if I'm the Yankees, I'm all in on Kyle Tucker this offseason.
BT and Sal back on the Fan, 888 888-
808-1019. Fun baseball conversation to start the show. I'll have some fun with some other stuff along the way. Game 2 of the Baseball Card World Series, 1140. Kurt Schilling will join the show at, what did I say, Game 2? Game 3 of the Baseball Card World Series at 1140. Kurt Schilling will join the show at 1:20. Before the break, BT, you had teased that you want to ask me about the Mets X Factor. The way I would say it, I guess, is the rotation, because we could go over the lineup, and Mendy let it out there yesterday on Mets Hot Stove with Gary Apple, Zeal, and Blevins on SNY about the lineup. I don't know if you saw that.
I did not see this.
It's going to be Soto, number two.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. I wouldn't do that, but I'm not surprised.
Lindor, Soto, he didn't write it in stone, but said, all right, we already named Lindor the first guy. Mm. It seems like it's going to be Soto, number two. Anyway,
did he go beyond that? He didn't go to 3 and 4, right?
He did not go beyond that. But you could do the
Mantos and Pete, I would think.
Yeah, I mean.
I would think, right?
I think what they're going to do, it's not what I would do.
Yeah.
What they're going to do is, this is just a guess, they're going to go Lindor, Soto. That's not a guess. That's what he said. I think they're going to go Pete, 3, Nimmo, 4, Vientos, 5.
Don't love it.
I would go, my lineup I've been giving you all winter here, Lindor, Soto, Vientos, Nimmo, Alonso.
Yes, which differs from mine of Lindor and then Vientos, 2, followed by Soto, 3, Alonso. Followed by Pete Alonso, 4, then Nimmo, so then maybe Alvarez, whatever. But
we
all
have 3 different ones.
And his is the one that counts. He's the manager, so he's not going to listen to us.
All right,
so X-Factor for you, Sal.
Now, for the whole...
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Because the perceived weakness of the Mets going in is the staff, much like the perceived weakness of the Yankees is their lineup. So you hit me with the X-Factor for the lineup. Your X-Factor for the rotation.
God, I think it's a great question. If we're going off the same premise that we did with the Yankees, right, it's going to be, for me, who's got the highest potential to be a difference maker. Like, I think Peterson is solid. I don't think he's got the potential to be a difference maker. Clay Holmes, I think, will be solid. Could be a disaster. I think he'll be solid. He would maybe be second in this list. I think it's Kodai Senga. I believe Manaea is going to be what he was a year ago. I don't know what Kodai Senga is going to be. And people can say what they want. I know you like him. You're higher on him. He was very good his first year. He was a disaster last year. Did not pitch. And when he did pitch in the postseason, wasn't very good. Is he going to be as good as he was his first year? Is he going to be somewhere in between? The expectations for Senga, let's not forget, and it does mean something. The expectations for Kodai Senga when the Mets signed him were never to be an ace. He's not Yamamoto. He wasn't supposed to be an ace coming over from Japan. He was supposed to be, and matter of fact, the Mets at the time thought he might be better out of the bullpen. So,
is that true?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, you talk about when they signed him? Because they gave him 5 years, 75, not to go out of the bullpen.
He didn't get a lot. They thought I don't know if it was the Mets. I think there were people in the organization and people outside of the organization that viewed him better off as a reliever.
Okay.
So I think Senga, like, is it safe to say, in your opinion, that Manaea is pretty solid as a one or two?
Yeah, I think, you know, on a loaded team, he's not your ace.
Right.
But, you know, I'm a Manaea fan. Okay. I think he's going to be good.
Or maybe
the
better way to phrase it is it safe to say you know what you expect to get from Sean
Manaea? I think he's going
to
be effective. He's going to have a good year.
Me too, right? I kind of can figure out what he's going to be. I think Senga could pitch like a number one or could pitch like a 3 or 4. And if he pitches, like if Manaea does what he did at the end of last year and we expect him to continue doing, and Senga pitches like he did in 2023 and is a top of the rotation guy, don't you think that changes things with Senga and Manaea then?
Yes.
As a 1-2 punch?
100%. So I like Senga.
That's why I know you believe in him more than I do.
I do.
I mean, that's why I have him as my X factor. I think he could be a difference maker in the rotation. Who else is it? I mean, maybe Montas would have been the answer to this question if you asked me, Senga, you know, a week ago.
Uh-huh.
I got it here, BT. Manaea, Senga, Peterson, Holmes, Blackburn, Canning, McGill, Frankie Montas. Like
Holmes,
that,
yeah. Who's four again?
I had Holmes, Blackburn, 5.
Yep, and who's 6 now?
Canning.
That, okay, so.
Tyler McGill.
Yep, I got you. All right, so let's do this. So, it's not conventional, but it's a 6-man rotation. Obviously, if you got 5, it's easier on the math. Because, give me the percentage. So, okay, Manaea, we're going to give him a check. Senga, you're worried about, so we're going to give, not an X, but a question.
Yeah.
Right?
Actually, I just changed my answer. I totally forgot something.
What? Okay, who is it?
Brandon Sproat. He could be the X factor because you saw it last year. Christian Scott came up and showed good potential.
I think Scott looked great.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good. But again, he got hurt.
I think Sproat's
now
pretty filthy.
Now, again, who the hell knows? I'd be lying to you if I said I know anything about Brandon Smart. Like, I haven't watched him pitch. I've seen the highlights and know enough about him to know that he's a guy that I regretted to mention last week when we were doing this exercise, or earlier in the week about Montas.
Okay.
He's just getting overlooked right now. Of all these names, outside of Senga and Minaya, Sproat's got the highest potential. Like, it's not even debatable.
It definitely seems that way. Yeah, I've seen some
He's got the highest ceiling. He's supposed to be...
I know.
Now, I mean, years ago, it was supposed to be Mike Vassell coming up. You know how I am about prospects. Mm. But for the X-Factor conversation, if I'm factoring in Sproat, who right now is not in the picture,
yeah,
I think he could be a difference maker in this rotation.
Interesting. All right, so I just wrote his name. I push him to the side. So we're going to put a check next to Minaya. We're not worried about him. You are, and again, there's varying degrees of concern or questions, but it's not unfair for you to put a question mark next to Senga, correct?
I would have a little bit of a question.
Yeah, that's why I say there's different degrees. Yeah. Peterson, slight question?
I think less of a question than Senga, because I think the volatility of what he... Like, I think he's just going to sit nice as a 3 or 4.
Holmes, question or no?
I think you have to.
Based on the transition.
You have to. Now, for me, I do trust that it's going to work out, but come on.
When you guys signed him, I liked it. Absolutely. I liked it more than most. But I'm like, okay, it's smart.
Absolutely a question.
Blackburn. Question. Yeah, I mean, he's not good, but if he's going to be a starter, that's... Yeah, well, so we're going to put a little question, right?
I think he's okay as a 5 or 6. I mean...
What about Cannon?
I know.
Who the hell knows? Yeah. So question, because we don't really know a ton about him.
Question.
So I think any way you look at it, Sal...
Montas, obviously.
Massive question. I think it's anything less than saying that, at least now on paper, and I wrote it down, so I'm literally holding paper, that 50% of the projected Mets rotation, not including Sproat, is a question. Fair?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. How many position players are questions?
I would say...
is where it gets more favorable for you, but there's got to be a few.
I would say...
second base?
But even that, like, I think that... I think the questions, like, they're not going to be lower than every position, so I kind of know what I'm getting from Siri. You may not like it, but I like it. Like, I like the defense and the potential pop there.
Okay.
So I'm okay with that. That's not a question. Soto, obviously not a question. I think Alonso, less of, like, you should know what you're
getting. He's going to hit home runs.
Again, to me, I don't think he's going to have a huge year, but I hope that he does.
Mm-hmm.
Second base is kind of insignificant. It's McNeil, Acuna. Like, I'm not expecting much there. I would say question, but mild, like, or an insignificant question. Lindor, no question. Vientos, I don't have a question. I think the two biggest questions are Alvarez and Nimmo. So if you were to ask me the biggest X factor for the Mets lineup, it would be one of those two. Maybe even more so Alvarez, because at least Nimmo, the floor is still...
he's going to hit some home runs. He's not going to hit 220. Right, I know what you mean.
But I still think he could be... he has all-star potential. I'm counting on Nimmo being an all-star this year. If he's not, it'd be a disappointment. I told him that to his face. So, I mean, he's expecting that too. We'll see what happens. But yes, I would say the bigger X factor or question is Alvarez, where he could be a star or he could be a bust.
So think about what we just did here. We did the Yankees. We did the Mets. Yankees have a couple of questions around the batting order, positions, fewer questions on the staff. Mets probably have fewer questions with the lineup, but more questions with the rotation, which is exactly why I said I like both teams coming in. I think both teams are good, but
there's
both teams didn't go all in. That's exactly what I said an hour ago.
Yeah, and it's just a difference of how you would prefer your team being built. Heavy in the rotation or heavy in the lineup? I would go the lineup myself. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal on the Fan Warrior calls when we come back.
Last year was a tremendous year that came out of nowhere, and now with all the expectations on the team, you know, it's tough to deliver in those situations. And in most times in Mets history, it doesn't work out that way. Now, you know, the 86 Mets, there were a lot of expectations on them, and they ended up winning the World Series. At all other times, you know, the greatest Mets seasons generally come out of nowhere. Like the last time they went to the World Series, when they got Yoenis Cespedes, that came out of nowhere. That team stunk. And then they got Cespedes. They go on this run.
What year was that?
2015.
15, right.
Yeah. And then this past year, you know, they were dead. They had that reliever who threw his glove in the stands and said this is the worst team in Major League Baseball. They were 11 games under 500. And they have a team meeting and they end up going to the NLCS, one of the most memorable seasons ever. The 69 Miracle Mets. No one expected that team to go and win the World Series. So when there's expectations, like when they had Verlander and Scherzer, you know, it usually ends up not being great. So that's why I get a little bit nervous. But this is a new regime, and I have to put that stuff aside. It's a new owner. They're signing a guy who's 25, 26 years old. They're not signing some old hag pitcher who's in his 40s that they're paying $40 million to. So I can't be panicked over expectations. I just can't, even though it's really hard not to.
Well, a lot of times what comes with, listen, anytime you have expectations on winning anything, it comes with understanding that the core of that is about being selfless, right? Like, that's why I give Sterling Marte so much credit, right? Like, they set him down, like, there's a chance you may be traded. You know, you're no longer the right fielder. You're 36 years old. But we got a new guy in town, and he's been very positive. Like, hey, man, whatever I can do to support this team, I'm willing to do that. Anytime you have that type of attitude and guys in that locker room believing, like, hey, man, if we want to get to where we got to get to, we got to get Pete Alonso back. Did it. They signed Soto. Did it. And we got to go get to your point. We got to go get it now. Enough of the talking. The expectation is real. Let's go achieve it. But it starts with being selfless. And I think the Mets are.
Yeah, and one of my favorite lines, and I've said this many times, is expectation is the thief of joy. Because
where'd you hear that at?
I heard it in a golfer said it, actually.
Oh, man.
That's where it came from, on a YouTube video. and he was out there and he was talking about it, which really applies to golf, by the way. Expect you go sure. out there and you think you're going to play well and you don't, then all of a sudden you're not having a great day. You're
that's me. Every off. Time I hit the driving range, I'm like, I'm about to clean this course up.
Yep.
Right off the tee, slice.
Exactly. So expectation, the thief of joy, because you don't end up enjoying the ride as much because it's about the end game. And then, you know, just like the season, I mean, the 2022 Mets, the year that they ended up, you know, having what they lost to the Braves in the end with a division, yep. and choked away the division, and went down to Atlanta, and then ended up losing to the Padres in the first round of the playoffs. It was like everything that had happened prior to that, you felt like it was just nothing because they ended up losing the division. They didn't even get out of the first round of the playoffs. That was a year with all the trumpets and Edwin Diaz and everything else. And you thought, like, man, like, this is a special year. And all you really remember is them losing in the biggest spots. But this last year,
it was special
because no one thought they were going to be good.
I mean, at one point, they're talking about selling, right? And then Lindor has that big run with Lindor. And I'm sitting there, like, as a Yankee fan, I'm like, man, there's momentum.
Yeah, I know.
Legit momentum here.
Yeah, I mean, and then the Dodgers are just way too good. It's just really what it came down to. You know, both of these teams now, the over-under numbers are through the roof with both of them. I think the Yankees is higher because they play in a division that's not as good as the NL East. But this is going to be back and forth, like, even though we shouldn't care about each other as much, like, this is a point that I always say we really shouldn't. You should be focusing on the Red Sox. You know, they went out and got Alex Bregman. We should be focusing on the Braves and the Phillies. This year, with what happened with Soto, we are going to be in each other's faces the entire year. You go on a 3-game losing streak, that Met fan's coming for you. If Juan Soto's 100%. Goes, well, like, 0-for-14 stretch, that Yankee fan is going to be posting about that, going crazy. We are not going to let each other out of our sights.
The hot girl that got away. We did everything we could, right? Got all the gifts, the trips. You know, we did everything we could.
Yeah.
To quarter, make it feel great.
God forbid.
She walked out the house and went across the street.
He's just got, and he's had a history of staying healthy. I know he missed a few games last year for the Yankees, but that's like the biggest thing. Like, if the Yankee fan would throw a party if Juan Soto got hurt and missed some significant time.
I don't hate Soto, though.
How could you not? I mean,
I'm a Soto fan. I like the moxie. I like the flair at the plate. I like the fact that he actually has a personality. I like it all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't like him as a Met, sure. But I don't hate the man.
I mean, and I could, this is, as Chris McMonagle, after I disagree with him, you know, sent me a text. I'll tell him, I'll agree with him on this. These hats that they're wearing.
Fire.
No.
No.
I think they make him look like a rinky-dink team. With the Mr. Met with the orange hat. Like, I'm sorry. I love the Mets. Grew up a huge Mets fan. When Juan Soto,
you like tradition?
No, not necessarily. I just don't want it to look like a cartoon minor league team. No, but like when Juan Soto came out as a Yankee in spring training, you're like, ooh. He comes out here. He puts on a Mr. Met with sunglasses hat that's orange. It looks like we're a joke again. Like, just have the regular hats.
I'm sorry.
I think you're just being an old timer.
No,
you already started to show off cranky and angry. Now you're upset.
That another one of those little things that is.
Did you see
Eddie,
that
does
hat?
Does this piss you off? You don't like? I like the hat.
I don't mind it. I don't love it. I don't mind it.
Even yesterday or 2 days ago, when I was looking up there, I said to Eddie, "I go, what is going on with this Mets hat?" And I Googled it. It was very bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a Mr. Met in Florida hat. I mean, and this is like this
Volker
is the
retiring Met.
this is the thing that we've been trying to shake for the longest time. Like being
so,
a little,
you think this is a downgrade?
Well, that hat, yeah. I mean, you got this player for $750 million.
Yeah.
And the first day he's out there, he comes out, and you're like all excited to see him, and he puts on that silly ass hat. It just feels weird.
What do you want, camo? Like, what,
I
don't understand.
Just want
what are you
Mets
looking
hat.
For?
I want the blue Mets hat.
I think the hat looks good. I like the
because
little,
you're not a Mets fan, and it's for a Yankee fan. You look at that, and you're like, that's what the Mets do.
But it's flair. I like a little flair.
All right. So if you had like a I don't know, a Yankee hat that was not the main color of your hat, and it had some...
If it had, like, Uncle Sam's face on
right,
it,
yeah.
Holding a baseball?
Yeah, with sunglasses on.
The young folks call it drip.
I'm okay
with
you telling me you would like that?
I mean, listen, I like having alternatives. So I think if it's a switch-up, sure. I don't mind it. I understand the classic traditional look, but you're making it seem like it's the worst decision they made thus far.
It's something that feels like they're going backwards again. Like this is all by going forwards and all this stuff. Like I just wear the regular hat. For God's sakes. Like look at this, the helmet right in front of us. That's what it should be. Just be that. And then when you're Juan Soto and it's supposed to be the new regime and the new Mets and we're different.
Right.
And it's not the Wilpon Mets and here is our prized possession. He's wearing his goofy ass hat. Take some away from it. Sorry.
We begin with baseball sound, and that's where we'll start
today. Well, there
were
some things. There was also another thing that pissed me off at spring training as well that I said, okay, there's two sports topics now, and it's spring training stuff is pissing you off. You gotta go, like, I don't know what I need to do, like smoke some hookah or something or go get a massage.
Like the steering wheel.
Yeah, like just something. I need to do something to relax.
A little frustrated over there, huh?
Yeah, over dumb things. Mm. It's just silly. But the whole Frankie Montas thing got to me. But anyway, go ahead.
Yes, we'll get to that in a second. But we did hear first from Pete Alonso since he re-signed with the Mets and looked and sounded like the Pete we've come to know and love. Happy, jovial, goofy, and thrilled to be back.
Throughout the entire offseason, we had the best dialogue from the Mets, and like that was it. Like, and for us, like this was the best opportunity, and for me, and I mean, I'm just really happy to be back. I mean, this was it.
Well, it certainly didn't seem that simple throughout the long process, especially when Steve Cohen expressed
just one thing here. Yeah. Seal, sorry to cut you off. The one thing about this Pete Alonso press conference. So I've talked many times about how like I wish I could just totally get rid of social media and some of the things, but then if I did. Like, you'd miss good things from listeners or funny suggestions. And this is one of those things where it just made me smile when someone was a listener to this show. So Evan tweets out or posts on X yesterday, we are airing the Pete Alonso press conference live right now on The Fan.
Oh, no.
And Shark Jones writes to me, feed up mail-in spot ? GOWFAN, which is this is my guy right here. I don't know where Shark Jones is. I don't know who you are, but we are on the same level. So I will ask Al, because he is our true radio director at heart, but doesn't want to work that hard. Is that a feed up mail-in spot?
Correct. There's no controversy about this press conference. He's not going to say anything interesting. It's not breaking news. It's 100% feed-up spot.
Yeah, feed-up spot on President's Day, no less. You know, so not a lot of people took it off. So it's like, you know, it's President's Day. We could just air this press conference.
If it was Aaron Rodgers who's holding his own press conference, yes, I'm interested in that live.
Because we haven't heard from him. We haven't heard from Pete, but Pete's also never said anything controversial ever.
Not controversial, but there was some good stuff.
There was some good stuff, but...
You know.
There's a difference between playing the good stuff when it's over as opposed to airing the press conference.
It's also Evan, though, and he lives for this stuff. He's a baseball nerd and a geek and a Met fan, wanted Pete back. So, you know, he was in there. He didn't have his feet up. checked out. He was all, you know, pumped
up. So you're
up.
Saying geek spot, yeah, not geek spot feet up Malin spot.
Maybe feet up for the rest of the afternoon show, but not for Evan.
All right, very good.
All right, so you did have Cohen, of course, expressing that frustration with the negotiations when he spoke at Amazon Day at Citi Field. But we know Cohen and David Stearns flew to Tampa to meet with Pete and Scott Boras to get the deal done. Here was Cohen with Howie Rose on the latest edition of Meet at the Apple, talking about what turned out to be a pivotal decision for them.
I just wanted to make sure that he heard from us how we felt about him. I just felt like he deserved that respect. He's been a great Met for a long time. He's a fan favorite. And I thought there was a real opportunity to sit down with him and kind of hash it out.
Which they did with little help, as it turned out, from the super agent.
Had a great conversation over a few hours. And frankly, Pete did all the talking. I mean, Scott Boras was there. And Scott didn't say a freaking word the whole time. And it was like, I turned to him, I go, I just want to make sure your pulse is, you know, you're still breathing over there. Okay? Because
That's not easy, by the way.
Yeah, that was like, I was like, surprised.
I think any of us would have been surprised to learn that, even though we get it at that point, it was about Cohen and Alonso probably finding the middle ground. But for the right, Pete fired the original agent, went to Boras to get the deal, which he ultimately didn't get. And then in the end, he basically has no say.
Pete also said that a lot of guys in the locker room called him during this process.
I'm sure they did.
You talk about Manai and Lindor. They called him and said, listen, man, we want you here. We need you here. I know you got to do what you got to do, but you want it. And that always feels good, too, especially with guys in the locker room with you.
I want to talk about a feet-up spot. That's what it was for Scott Boras. Yeah. He's like, I did what I needed to do this offseason. I got Juan Soto that contract. I'm not going to get a ton of commission off of this. I'm just going to show up here. I'm going to look at my phone to see what time it is, let Pete do all the talking, and get the hell out of here.
Yeah. Well, back to Alonso, last one before we move on. He was asked if he shared Cohen's sentiment that the negotiations were exhausting along the way.
Not for me.
Maybe for Scott.
Yeah, we were... No, we were good. We were all good. I'm well, I guess that means we're sorry, Steve.
Yeah. What am I missing with this? Everybody seemed to understand it. Everyone laughs. Like,
I play it again because I don't understand it.
Yeah,
either.
I mean, there must have been some context that I missed.
Not for me.
Maybe for Scott.
For us.
Yeah, we were good. We were all good. I'm I guess that means we're sorry, Steve.
No, this is what it was, because actually I did see this yesterday. He was asked, Steve Cohen said that the process was exhausting. Was it exhausting for you? And he said, not for me.
No, I know that.
And then he said at the end, he was like, sorry, Steve, because it was exhausting for him.
Yeah, but it seemed like he caught it, like he was going to say something and kind of checked himself there in the middle of that answer. I just wonder what he was.
I just don't think he's particularly bright.
Okay.
You know?
Fair enough.
That's what it comes down to.
That's my point.
The Mets have the option. They have the option at the end of this year to get out of it, right?
He does.
Yeah.
He's guaranteed, if he stays for next year, I think it's an additional $24 million.
Mm.
But if he has a big year, he can opt out and see if he can get paid again in free agency. As Gio alluded to, though, not all fun and games for the Mets, as one of their buy low starting pitching acquisitions from the offseason is already sidelined. And like Giancarlo Stanton, this is a guy who is often injured, and that is Frankie Montas, as the Mets have shut him down already for 6 to 8 weeks. High-grade lat strain, I guess, seemingly from the throwing program he was working with as he was getting ready for spring training. So a guy who we saw injured with the A's and the Yankees and another stop is going to begin the year on the IL and miss significant
time. Yeah, and that is the argument that should be used for this. If you're someone who wants to get on David Stearns, it's the injury history. It's not because the thing that I heard yesterday is definitely because the Yankee Met thing is hotter than it's been since the year 2000 with the fan bases because of what happened with Juan Soto and everything else and the way that the Yankees lost in the World Series after the Mets played the Dodgers. It's intense and it's great. But you cannot, if you criticize that signing after he gets hurt, goes, well, look at the rotation now. What are you going to do? Now Montas is hurt. I mean, you told us that he sucks and he was going to get hurt. So don't tell me that the rotation now is worse because he's hurt. You expected he was going to get hurt. You told me that he sucked. So what is it? It's not a big loss if he sucks. You cannot say he sucks and then say it's a big loss for the Mets.
The big loss is that we already felt, or most people felt, myself included, that they didn't have a ton of depth there and a lot of question marks.
The injury part of it is right. You're right. The way the depth framed it is right.
Yeah, yeah.
But when somebody comes and says, wow, you know, the rotation now, they're missing Montas.
Yeah, who cares? Right.
Like, if he's that bad,
Yeah.
Then any alternative will be better, according to you.
When are you expecting him back, man?
A human with a pulse. Well, 6 to 8 weeks, and then once he resumes, he's got to go through full spring training, so it's going to be a while. I mean, that much is clear.